Last year, this court adopted rules regarding permissive e-filing in criminal cases. We're here today to hear comments on the issue of whether e-filing in criminal cases should be mandatory. We invited a number of people to offer comments on the issue, and we have received a number of written comments, many, if not all, of the people who we invited are here to speak on the issue. I will call on them in the order in which they appear in this court's order that set this hearing. Each speaker will have 5 minutes. If any member of the public wishes to speak, you should have given your name to the bailiff here to my right. The bailiff can also answer any questions that you might have about, try to answer any questions you might have about the procedure. We are limited in time, and we expect to be through by 11 o'clock. If anyone has signed up for comments, we will try to hear from you and ask that you limit your comments to 2 minutes. In any event, you may submit written comments to the court after this hearing. That being said, I will begin with the Honorable Rebecca Simmons. Justice Simmons, thank you for being here. Do you have any comments that you would like to share with us on the issue?
Yes, I do. Presiding Judge Keller, members of the esteemed Court of Criminal Appeals, thank you so much for allowing this opportunity to speak to you in this forum and open engagement with the public on the question of mandated e-filing. I come today on behalf of the Judicial Committee on Information Technology. It's a committee that was created by the legislature to advise the courts on technology. And for the past 5 years, we've been engaged in really promoting e-filing across the state in a unified manner and assisting the Supreme Court and this court with comments and from the stakeholders across the state. As you know, the Supreme Court, over the past 2 years, we have been implementing civil e-filing across the state. It was mandated, and we spent the past 2 years rolling it out across the state. All of the counties in the state of Texas now e-file. It will be mandated in all counties by July of 2016, but overall, it has been a success. There are over 135,000 registered users in the state of Texas. That means that the majority of lawyers in the state of Texas are e-filing in the civil aspect. Right now, we get approximately 600 criminal e-filings, documents filed a day, so that you need to be aware of that. So criminal e-filing is actually proceeding in the state as well. As you know, there is efficiency both for the clerks and for the clients in terms of cost, and in terms of easy access to documents. And eventually, we hope to provide an electronic system for accessing documents to attorneys for their cases and for judges across the state so that they can easily access the court. But that won't be available for judges to access e-file documents and access digital documents, and it won't be available for lawyers unless we do begin an e-filing initiative on the criminal aspect. Our recommendation for JCIT is to mandate e-filing. And you must ask why. E-filing was available in the civil context before the Supreme Court mandated it for about 10 years. But there was uniform adoption across the state. And so it was inefficient. In fact, the provider of the e-filing system backed out because it wasn't cost-effective for them. The clerks were in a hybrid situation, as they are now, dealing on the one hand with paper and on the other hand with electronics. It's very inefficient for the clerks. Lawyers now have been educated, and they know more about e-filing, and they are e-filing across the state. In pursuit of our recommendation, JCIT would make you this commitment. We continue to look and review standards every year, at least twice, to make sure that the technology standards and the issues that arise with clerks and with lawyers actually work. We make you that commitment to do that. We also make you the commitment that we will work on, as we did with the civil e-filing, educating lawyers. We ended up having many meetings with districts all across the state to advise lawyers on how to implement. And we would make that commitment to you that we would work with the district clerks, the county clerks, and others to do that. Finally, I do want to say what this doesn't cover and what our recommendation doesn't cover. It doesn't cover pro se filing. We understand, and in the civil context, they still file by paper. We're not going to recommend against that. We also understand that there may be the initiation documents and things like that that we've already dealt with that are in paper now, the indictment, charging the information, the charging instruments. And we understand that this wouldn't apply to that. But we do believe the remainder of the filings in the criminal cases can be efficiently e-filed, and it would be a benefit to the state and to the public as well. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'm happy to entertain them.
Are you aware that something like 80% of our cases, particularly in writs, are pro se, so that's not really going to change the efficiency level much for us anyway, because those things are going to come in on paper until TDCJ decides to give internet access to their inmates, which is highly unlikely.
You know, I understand that there are far more pro se's probably in the criminal side, although I'm sure civil also has a great number of them. But we do think it would be efficient for at least the attorneys that are retained to e-file in the district and county levels, because we think that would be help the clerk and also help those lawyers eventually be able to access documents in their cases.
Is your recommendation limited to the trial courts?
Our recommendations are limited to because the appellate court already, of course, has its own rules. So we're talking about the district and county courts, not about municipal courts.
I was thinking more of the appellate courts.
The appellate courts already e-file and mandate e-filing.
In all cases?
Yes.
What if he doesn't have a lawyer?
Excuse me?
Are you thinking that they all have lawyers then at that level?
I'm not thinking that they all have lawyers at that level. I'm talking again about not pro se's, but about the represented clients.
So the regulations are specifically exempt pro se's?
It does, yes. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming. Appreciate your comments. Next, can we hear from Cindy Hyatt for Shauna Lively, please?
Good morning, Honorable Court of Appeals. Thank you for allowing me to address you. I'm simply here on a narrow issue that affects court reporters and how this order may affect our jobs. We are concerned because I'll explain the situation that got me here, first of all. A court reporter, there was an issue that evolved involving a court reporter's exhibits, which are a part of her official record that were required for an appellant record. In that situation, in that her particular county, the district clerk or the county clerk of that county interpreted the rule to mean that once her exhibits for the appeal were filed electronically, that those trial exhibits could then be destroyed. And so our concern is, I'm an official in Bexar County, and I file records on appeal all the time. And so our concern simply is that we want to make sure that this order requiring electronic filing is real clear, that there's a differentiation between exhibits that are filed perhaps as pleadings or attached to different criminal documents are different than trial exhibits that are required to be retained for appellate purposes. And I'll refer to in the proposed statewide rules, under Rule 2.1, where it defines document, it says a document is defined as a pleading, plea, motion, application, request, exhibit, brief, memorandum of law, or other instrument in electronic form. So my concern is that particular definition of document, that an exhibit is encompassed in that definition, and therefore, if you look further in that proposed order, under Rule 4.14, referring to the official record, it says, I quote, the clerk is not required to keep both paper and electronic versions of the same document. So my concern and the concern on behalf of the court reporters in the state of Texas are that we want to be sure that a district clerk is not interpreting that to mean that our trial exhibits are going to be destroyed once we file them electronically. Basically, that's my position, and I'm open for questions if anybody has a question regarding that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for coming. Tracy Hopper, please.
Good morning, Honorable Justices. My name is Tracy Hopper. I'm the application developer at the Harris County District Clerk's Office, and I'm basically the project manager over our implementation of e-filing. I've came to you due to our county size, as the JCIT refers to us as the country of Harris. Printing documents is not an option for us. In order to accept electronic filings, we have to have an electronic case file and electronic courts. When the civil mandate was signed in 2012, we had to put together a plan because 8 of our family courts were still paper courts. So when, by the time we got the plan together, we got quotes from vendors for hardware and software, and we got it approved by the Budget Office and Commissioner's Court. We finally got funded in August of 2013. We then had to get all those documents scanned. We got our first batch from the vendor in September of 2013, and then our last batch was sent to us in February of 2014. So in the family side, we didn't kind of meet that mandate, but we were electronically filing. We were just in a hyper mode until then, which doesn't work. And then in that case, those family courts had 28,000 active case files. In our criminal courts today, we have 38 criminal courts that the district clerk manages, 22 felony, 16 misdemeanor. In those courts today, there's 41,000 active case files. So we have to get all of those files electronic. We have a plan to do that, but our commissioner's court and our budget office will not approve that plan until there is a mandate. We would like to see a mandate and that plan to move forward to get all of our courts electronic. Since all the civil side is electronic, we want the criminal to do the same thing. But it's going to take about 18 months to get that plan completed. So we are pleading with the court to allow at least 18 to 24 months after signing a mandate before our county goes live. We also urge the court to grant us as few exceptions as possible to the mandate. Less paper filed into the court, the less we have to turn to electronic by scanning. We also urge that the rules for e-filing allow existing county systems that have been in place already today to continue those systems. The two systems that I have for an example is our voucher system. It's called VIPS for Voucher Information Processing. That system is a state-granted system that we got money to obtain to allow the appointed attorneys in criminal cases to file their vouchers electronically. We basically give a list of cases for those appointed attorneys that have been appointed to those cases. They're able to pick the settings that they showed up in. They file that voucher. The judges in our criminal court sign them electronically today. It's the only one they sign electronically. And then that voucher gets sent on to our auditors. The attorney gets paid a lot faster than what they do today. Our e-subpoena application is another example. The attorneys go online, they're able to fill out all their witnesses that they want to subpoena. They get that application generated electronically. We generate that subpoena electronically, and we electronically send that information to the sheriff. So we would like to continue those electronic systems that I'm giving you as an example, but the rules don't have that in there today, so we would like the rules amended for that if possible. I think that's mainly everything I had. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Hopper.
All right, thank you.
The Honorable Sherry Woodfin.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you so much for the invitation to be here and present kind of a clerk's perspective of
e-file mandate for criminal. I've had the honor of serving with Justice Simmons and several other people on the JCIT committee, and I look forward to the day that we do make criminal e-file mandatory. And for that purpose, I would like to speak a little bit about what I've submitted in writing to you all. First of all, I am presenting as district clerk from Tom Green County, but in preparation of this testimony, I did send out some questions to clerks all over the state and tried to get some input from them as to how they perceive this hearing and how they thought it should be addressed. So in doing that, I believe it's important to talk a little bit about their responses and the obstacles that they've come across within the civil process of e-file. Mostly, if clerks don't have a case management system that's robust enough to handle moving to a paperless environment, there are some challenges. Also, the integration is key with the e-file system. For having that integration with the case management system and those documents to flow seamlessly into their case management system at their county. The other issue is lack of cooperation from the courts, from judges, from those that have to access those documents, and from clerks that maybe a judge is ready to be electronic and not having the availability to provide that to the judge. And then all available resources being expended to maintain the current court system, printing the documents, making paper files so the court can continue. You're using money that you could, you know, in turn use to make a paperless court. So all these things weigh into the reality of the inherent complications with changing courts from 200 plus years of how they've operated. The success of e-file hinges on courts transitioning to a paperless system. I think this will continue as counties become more familiar with e-file and how they can use this to their benefit, and they'll work towards becoming paperless in their counties. In Tom Green County, we've moved to a paperless environment for civil and in criminal. In criminal, what we do is we take that paper, we scan it in, and then it goes to a quality control queue, and we make sure that image is good before that record, that original document, that source document is then destroyed. Once that process has been built, we've got a file. It is in electronic format, and our judges access that fully in the courtrooms and utilize that electronic file. We no longer make paper files. In doing that, we've saved money for our county as far as the paper itself. We don't order file folders. We've also been able to reallocate staff duties and actually have reduced our staff. We no longer need a scanner, someone that sits there and scans documents if we have an integrated system where those documents flow directly into our system. It also provides judges to be able to sign documents remotely and view images remotely, so they can work if they want to be on vacation and be able to look what's coming up on their calendar. Then they can look at their files and review what they're going to have when they get back. And then also, I think that a quicker turnaround is a huge benefit for the person filing. It helps us be able to do our work in a much more responsive fashion, that it doesn't have to go and sit for the judge to, you know, to review everything in their basket. It goes into a workflow queue, and basically they go through those queues in a very quick fashion. Within a day, we have things signed, whereas before it may take 3 to 4 days for that turnaround. So in conclusion, I believe it's difficult for some counties to definitely move to that. Currently, with criminal e-file being optional, a clerk's office has to operate in two separate types of environments. Yes, it's currently being done in our county, but we're early adopter of criminal e-file, and we get maybe 20 to 30% of our filings in criminal are now our attorneys are utilizing that. So if it were mandated, I believe it would certainly be something that our attorneys would gravitate to and start using more. All counties in Texas have worked on this tremendous task, and it's apparent that collaboration is key and being paperless is key to make e-file something that's beneficial for all.
Representative Judge Kelly, may I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Are your judges in Tom Green County general jurisdiction judges? I ask that because in Harris County, for example, you have criminal justice judges that exclusively do criminal cases. And if your county has judges that were already doing civil, then it makes sense that it's easier for them to transition into criminal.
Yes, ma'am.
But I have heard some resistance from trial judges who just do criminal, who find the whole thing just too difficult, I guess, to access these things just electronically, and they want the paper. Can you describe how that has happened in your county, that from the judge's perspective, to your knowledge?
Yes, ma'am. They do hear civil and criminal cases. I also have two judges that have multi-county jurisdictions. So they have additional counties on top of that, and they are working to try and become paperless in those smaller counties because it does simplify what their duties are in the respect of trying to get through all the work that they are trying to accomplish. I could absolutely understand if that's all they're doing is criminal. They're not familiar with the way that it's working in civil, so there's going to be some walls that come up with that. And I mean, it's been a very long process for us to be able to get. We've been working for over 5 years to become paperless in our county. But my judges early on were like, no, there's no way we can do this. But when you come to the realization that if we don't, we're going to be printing all of this, I need extra staff, I need to be able to provide you this paper, there's some drawbacks in doing that. And so we believed that the drawbacks far outweighed the benefits. And that's what, in moving forward with criminal, I think we were maybe in the top five counties that my judges signed that order that quickly because they realized the benefit of it.
Judge Keller, I have a question too. How does your county handle trial exhibits like the court reporter was discussing a little while ago?
When she was speaking to that, we do not scan our trial exhibits. They go into our exhibit closet. If it's made part of the file, it certainly would be electronic. But as far as an exhibit, a court reporter bringing me an exhibit, we log it in on our log sheet and it goes into our exhibit closet. There, we don't destroy those.
Thank you.
In some of the more complicated criminal cases, the defense lawyers file ex parte motions. How are you limiting access to those if they're only meant for the judge's eyes?
Those, if they're filed under seal, they would bring over the paper. If they're filed within the e-file system and then the judge reviews it and decides that it needs to not be a public document, we have a way of securing that document where it would not show. Currently, we don't have all of our documents accessible to the public. They're only accessible to the attorneys of record and also to the court staff and the judges. So they're not available for everyone to see.
Did you all help train the judges?
Early on, we had a lot of meetings, provided lunch and had lots of just e-file
like
work processes and how we can make this work. And I believe that the approach with them, I've never been one to say this is how we need to do it. I always want their input and how it's going to work best for them. And they absolutely helped me build a process that is acceptable to them.
Okay, thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
Randall Chapman here.
Good morning, members of the court. My name is Randy Chapman. I work with Texas Legal Services Center. Many of you may know us through Texas Law Help and our work with individual legal aid programs and their clients. I join Justice Simmons and members of the JCIT in speaking the praises of e-filing. It saves time, it's efficient, and it saves record storage it's a good thing. However, as consistent with comments that I filed previously with this court, I'm concerned about issues of privacy and public protection for persons who may be harmed if there are not adequate safeguards put in place first. Don't put the cart before the horse. When civil e-filing was implemented, rules were adopted regarding social security numbers, private information that could become electronic. Once it's digitized, it goes out there. It's accessible, and it'll follow you for life. The civil cases contain some sensitive information, but arguably criminal cases are all contain sensitive. The fact if the public has access to it, and that's where the rules have not been adopted. Simply saying it won't be posted on the internet does not prevent data brokers and commercial users from destroying the lives of people, especially those individuals who are trying to re-enter society, trying to get a clean record, trying to get a job, trying to get credit. If there are not protections in place, efforts by the courts, by the legislature, and good policy prevents that. The fundamental question is, what is punishment? For a youth that is harmed by a record, a simple shoplifting charge, they cannot get, if they plead guilty, and we know 90% of people plead guilty at some point, they may be denied a job, housing, credit, even right to education. I know of individuals whose law license was delayed until an investigation because of a minor charge, youth indiscretion. There are many good reasons to publish criminal records, but only after matters of privacy are addressed. I cannot overstate the importance of this work for the seven million families, as I am told, who have some form of criminal record. These government records, government created these records, and it should decide the extent to which this information is widely available. What is access to criminal records? Up to now, we have expungement. Up to now, people can request expungement. But in a digital age where you have offshore data brokers, that's a remedy, meaningless remedy. We have the doctrine of practical obscurity, meaning if you want to go check someone out, go down to the courthouse, look up their records. But if some individual takes a minute, they can get sit at their home, find out everything about you, and there's no way to undo it, to correct it afterwards. Summing up, my recommendation is to tweak the rules of judicial administration to prevent harm before mandatory e-file, or in the alternative, create a task force which would include individuals from the Department of Public Safety, OCA, the Fair Defense Council, individuals like Senator Whitmire, who's worked on this issue, and certainly advocates from the civil rights community. I thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Oh, did you have a question?
I was just wondering if you're looking for this task force to come up with the suggested ways to prevent this, or if you already had some ideas that you would be willing to submit to us at a later time.
I'll be happy to submit some recommendations to you at a later time. And I think they're, but bringing in these other actors that I mentioned, I believe would be helpful. I know DPS has looked at this carefully in conjunction with legislation that Senator Whitmire introduced. Be happy to follow up on that.
Thank you.
Any other?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Yenny?
Members of this honorable court, thank you for the opportunity to address you. My name is Jerry Yenny, and I'm the criminal district attorney for Brazoria County. I could not agree with Mr. Chapman more. What is startling to me is that we're talking about e-filing with civil and criminal as if they're the same thing. The criminal justice system is unique in our society. It's sacrosanct. Our job as a prosecutor is to see that justice is done. We need to take that seriously. That means we deal with a lot of pro se defendants. We deal with people whose lives are in our hands, crime victims, witnesses. No one wants to cooperate when they find out that your name is going in a court file and that it could go around the world. Public safety is an issue. Sex assault victim information is an issue. And what's concerning to me is, one of the things this court stands for that I've seen is that courts should be open to the public. The exclusion, I always look around the courtroom in a plea and I say, have we closed this court? Is the defendant's family here? Is everybody here that's supposed to be here? Because I take it seriously. And yet we're limiting access to the most important system in the world. We have pro se defendants, and I know we talked about pro ses being accepted. We get letters on a regular basis from jail inmates who are represented by counsel. I noticed that some of the comments pertained to, but I look at the proposed rules, and you'll see my ADD going, I'm going all over the place now. But criminal cases are municipal court and JP court. We're talking about the people's court. The average person should be able to still come to a court. 75 to 80% of them come pro se. After that, we have court-appointed counsel. We have very limited retained counsel at our county court level. Many of them are homeless. They don't have access to a computer. They send letters to the court. I have lots of sensitive information. I provide medical information to defense counsel on a regular basis, and it's filed and sealed because I believe you have to have a court order to give anybody else's medical to anyone, and I want it sealed. That's contained in a court's file. I want to make sure the court has information, lots of sensitive information, educational information up front so they can read it before a trial, the 400 pages of someone's educational records or their medical or their psych records, including my victims. This system has to be sacrosanct, and we have to be able to recognize all the moving parts in the criminal justice system that don't exist in the civil system. Law enforcement agencies filing search warrant applications in the middle of the night, do they have to e-file them? Should they be destroying the paper the judge authorized? State hospitals who have to report competency evaluations. I'm going to tell you a true story. One of my investigators, when I was researching a murder case, found a document. I wanted to see if the defendant had another case. It's a pending murder case. And online from Harris County, Texas, he pulled out a competency eval. I said, where did you get this? It's online, boss. What? I have pulled out defense lawyers' achy motions from other counties, from clerk's office. I've called defense lawyers and said, check your motions. You're online. This is serious business with someone's liberty. We have to get it right in the justice system. And it's okay to have it be, when we talk about, well, we're going to be having to deal with two separate duties, paper and e-filing. I'm going to level with you. I'm sorry if I don't have a handkerchief to that. This business is serious business. People's liberties at stake. We have people wandering through the courthouse. I'm going to give you read a letter, and then I'm going to talk about some few practical things. I got this letter just in time after my comments. Ma'am, I'd first like to introduce myself. My name is Melvin Torgo. I've been through your court in the past. I'm recently being held in the Brazoria County Jail. I'd like to apologize for the trouble I've been in the past, but that's past to me. The majority of trouble I've been in was for stealing things. But since that time, I went for burglary of a HAB. Ma'am, I'm disappointed in our justice system. I never thought I'd be a victim of a situation. He goes on to tell me that my previous plea bargains were fair, but that he's innocent of this case. And I believe him to have been so. I dismissed the case. He was not pro se. He was represented by counsel. I cannot tell you the number of court-appointed counsel who have expressed concern to me about mandated criminal e-filing. You know, we should have every option available in the criminal justice system because someone's liberty is at stake. We shouldn't be worried that it inconveniences us. And there shouldn't be a cost to the criminal justice system. Who's going to pay when you're filing a document? Defense counsel? A motion to suppress? That would be just wrong. And should the county be paying a filing fee for the state of Texas? I mean, it's a different entity. The state is bringing the criminal charges, either a grand jury or by complaint and information. And have we really thought about all of the people's courts that we are affecting across the state of Texas? JP courts, municipal courts. We've prided ourselves that it's the average man and woman's court, and serious business happens there. Affirmative findings of family violence, which I have asked not to be had in JP court of our JPs, because the person doesn't recognize the future ramifications that the next one's a felony. Criminal and civil are apples and oranges. It's okay to have a permissive criminal e-filing system, and maybe one day everyone will move to criminal e-filing. But we have lots of issues that we have to address before that time. You know, the Michael Morton Act was very important. It gave defense counsel every piece of information, and we have been swamped as prosecutors with technology. Body cams, things that we need to get to people, patrol cams. I'm going to be asking for probably three more people to help in office discovery to get timely criminal discovery. I want to make sure a defendant has access to everything. We want to do it right. We're sending out DNA notices now in Texas. We're sending them to inmates who are sending letters back. The criminal justice system should be accessible in all forms to anyone. And we shouldn't sacrifice justice for convenience, and we shouldn't make our courts less accessible when here would be an open court in every courtroom in Texas, just because it's more convenient to us. I'd like to read one last letter from a criminal defense lawyer, if I could. I don't agree with everything in it. He's a friend. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Please do read the letter, but your time is actually up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't look for the flashing light. Excuse me. This is from John Davis, a criminal defense lawyer, who I like but disagree with a lot of the times. As time goes on, we continue to erect more and more barriers, limiting access to the criminal justice system. Mandatory e-filing is just one more barrier, the magnitude of which, like an iceberg, is not readily apparent. Even if pro se defendants are allowed to file hard copy, the barrier is still there. Criminal defense bar is the lowest paid in the legal profession, with a few notable exceptions. Judges, to his opinion, skimp on court-appointed attorney's fees, and working class has little money to spare to hire lawyers. Unfortunately, this also equates to a large number of not-so-competent attorneys. E-filing simply adds to the attorney's expense and workload. It is one more reason for clerks to reject filings. Many attorneys do not relish giving an open-ended credit or debit card to a corporate entity with no control, and it balloons from there. He goes on, but he talks about how it is to be the small practitioner. I respect being given the time. 254 counties in Texas. Permissive e-filing is great, but people should be able in their communities to do what works for them for justice.
I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes.
Chapman had expressed some concern about privacy, and I wonder if you have any thoughts, since you seem to have thought about this question a lot. What about expunctions? Because people get stuff expunged, it gets on the internet, and even though they have been held legally innocent, or at least the charges are supposed to be gone, but because of the internet, they're not. Do you have any thoughts on how to address that?
I have some thoughts that probably would not be popular here. I believe that this is the problem that you encounter with e-filing. And it has significant impact Once you're on the internet, whether you're guilty or innocent, it doesn't matter to people. And the expungement aspect is serious business. We have people who say, my records are out there, Miss Yenny, and I'm expunged. Can you help me? This is the reason, when you take off from the expungement aspect, that every other piece of information, such as a victim's information, witness lists, home addresses, their medical records, every bit of it,
jurors
can wind up on the internet. And this is a very serious, and it's recklessly disregarded. Respectfully, I believe it is being recklessly disregarded that we've got it all covered. We got it all covered. We could seal it. Do you realize that in our county, one of the judges pointed out to me that she could change the clerk's records, and the clerk pointed out to me they could change the judge's records on the new system, and I brought it to people's attention, and the response was, it doesn't matter because we have an audit trail. It matters. If you can change a court's records electronically, or if someone can hack in, and as you see with medical controversies now, I'm holding your medical records hostage. I don't want somebody's educational records or their medical records or sex assault victims' exam out on the internet for fun. And I believe that we are being overly confident that we can limit it. And that's maybe the nicest way I can put it. I believe that maybe that there's a little overconfidence in saying what we can limit. But this is a system that is sacrosanct, and we should be willing to bear just a little inconvenience and for all the moving parts that go in to make it work.
Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
For your comments.
Thank you.
Judge Don Adams.
There you are.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for inviting me to come up here. My name's Don Adams. I'm the judge in Criminal District Court Number 2 in Dallas, and I think I'm kind of like a canary in a mine shaft. I understand the electronic filing is convenient for the clerks, but it is not convenient for anybody else. Been my experience in Dallas that the system we have lacks quality control and lacks any kind of uniformity on labeling things. It's very cumbersome. I would agree with given you written responses or input already, and I stand by all that. One of my original letter dealt with what Ms. Chapman indicated about the security, about putting stuff on the internet. I think the stuff that our criminal cases should not be on the internet. In Dallas County, they do put everything on the internet. It came out that all the divorces in Dallas County for the last several years had the Social Security numbers, dates of birth, and addresses and bank accounts for the people who got divorces in Dallas County. The same type of records going on the internet in Dallas County. So I'm against that. And we also need paper files. Paper files. I understand that this electronic filing is coming, but we still need paper files. It's convenient for the clerks, but things get messed up when they do file it, as I understand. When it comes in, the clerk either can accept it or reject it. If they accept it, then they're the ones that put it in the file. And if they don't get it in their file right, or they don't label it right, nobody knows it's there. So that's a bad system. We have an example out of Dallas that I think y'all may be familiar with, the Thomas Kaplan murder case. It was a retrial. It was tried back in the 80s with paper files, and it was retried with our electronic filing system. The files, I think y'all are fairly familiar with it, but the clerk said that everything was complete, and then they came up with 36 other documents that weren't in there. And the clerk, there's no control. I mean, it's things are run amok. And I gave examples of cases that went on appeal that were not processed until the court reporter attempted to file the record, and they said, well, we can't file it because it's not on appeal. Oh, yeah, and it has been on appeal. And that's not a new problem. It's been going on here. Y'all had cases back in the 2012 from our county, from the district clerk's office. That's the way they operate. But we have to have paper files to back it up. They talk about how much savings there is. There was an article in the Texas Weekly Lawyer that they said there were 7 million cases filed electronically, and they saved, I think it was 34 million pieces of paper. We pay, print stuff out over and over and over again because we can't, you know, we have to have paper to look at. And I think I'm not alone in that. I do have a smartphone. I do have, I do bank online. So, I mean, I'm not totally opposed to doing that kind of thing. But I mean, we need to have paper file because it's too important not to have it. It's a way to control it. And if the clerks have to print out the paper when it comes electronically filed, that's fine. They only have to print it out one time. Then we have it rather than print it out over and over again. So thank you all very much. If you all have any questions.
Questions? Thank you, Judge.
I want to think, as I have not dealt with it myself, but I think that if you have people with multiple cases and you're trying to deal with them at the same time, doing it electronically to go from screen to screen or file to file, I think that's very difficult.
Right. Thank you. Rob Keppel.
Good morning, Presiding Judge Keller and members of the court. My name is Rob Keppel. I'm the Executive Director of the District and County Attorneys Association. And I'm just going to bring some perspective from my members I've talked to about the prospects of e-filing. I think the general consensus from my membership is that obviously technology will advance and e-filing is something that will happen. At this point in time, they'd rather it not be mandatory for a couple of, I think, very practical reasons. The big issue for prosecutor offices today is implementation of the Michael Morton Act. It has been a tremendous change in their responsibilities, and it's taken obviously a number of technological solutions which are developing over time, but a tremendous manpower suck for a lot of those offices. So they're still in the midst of dealing with that. And that's going to take a couple more years, I think, before they're ready to say they've got that in hand. The other big technological problem which they're facing, which is a huge manpower problem that I don't know that people really appreciated, which just the implementation of the body cam programs that the police departments are using has become a tremendous technological challenge for them. And not just technological in terms of storage, but the manpower involved in handling that data, watching all that, transmitting it to the defense. Finally, every now and then they get a issue du jour like mixture DNA, which is taking an awful lot of time. So I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that they're not opposed to the concept. But they've got a few challenges right now that involve technology and involve increasing manpower for the counties as well as our offices. So they'd sure like they like the concept that we just hold that thought for a little bit and give us some time, maybe revisit that in a couple of years. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Joseph Martinez here. Okay, Mark Smith, Lisa David,
good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you this morning. I am Lisa David. I am the district clerk for Williamson County, and I think kind of it seems that the civil e-filing has come up. And while we were doing the civil e-filing, I think a lot of the players thought that that was the clerk's bill. I can promise you that the clerks did not go and, you know, buy for this civil e-filing. But once it took place, we went in full force and we did the best that we could because we had to be the ones that controlled all the paperwork. With criminal e-filing, I believe it's going to be the same thing. There's a lot of different entities that are involved, the courts, the attorneys, pro se filers. The e-filing is just a delivery system. For civil, there are case management areas that we can secure. They are not on the internet. The clerks have the ability to either put their records on the internet or not put their records on the internet. I choose not to put the records on the internet because I feel like I'm protecting the people that I'm serving, and I'm not going to have someone sit in their home and search records. If they want them, they can come in because I have public files. With the criminal e-filing, there's ways to redact, there's ways to secure that information. There's pro se litigants, just as there are in civil, and we have ways that are put in place for that. The Michael Morton Act, that happened, Michael Morton was from my county, so we get a lot of the Michael Morton popular, I guess, news. I'm not sure if it's good or bad, but the discovery that now comes into play because of that, when we have an attorney or the prosecutor or defense attorney wants to bring us in two boxes of discovery and we have to sit there and scan it into our system, where it would be a lot easier, I would think, if you're e-filing, you just put it in your system and you shift it on down to the clerk's office. Because now I have that responsibility. If I have paper files, I've got to find a place to put those two boxes or build me five or six different files to hold all of the discovery that I put in the file with that for the court to see. Williamson County, I did have a meeting with my judges. I have nine courts. I have five district courts and four county courts that do civil and family. However, in the district courts, I only have three courts that practice criminal and civil. It's three. They're specialty courts. I will say my judges right now, I have a lot of new judges. Been there, my presiding judge, senior judge, has been there right at 4 years. So I thought with them coming in, we're going to be able to move forward. We're going to be able to do some things because it was the new process of having your hands on that paper. And we found in some areas that being able to come through, pull it up on your computer system, each judge has their judge's edition. They've all been trained on how to do the judge's edition. But we still have the resistance of not wanting to turn on that computer and look at it. They want the file. Civil, I do not provide files. We're completely paperless, so they have to go through and they have to look at the computer on civil days. For criminal e-filing, I know that that's an issue also, just because of the amount of time that's spent on criminal cases. You know, on a civil case or on a civil day, we may run 5 to 10 a day. We're on criminal, we're running 200 to 250 a day on a criminal plea day. So, you know, the process needs to speed up in order to be able to pull up those cases, look at those cases on every defendant. The issue on the internet and the security of being able to put your information out on the internet, there's no statute that says you can't do it. So, I mean, if that's going to be a play into the criminal e-filing, then there needs to be some links as to what we can do. There also needs to be some more mandated direction on what you have to do. We all have to be on the same team. And between the clerk's office, you know, we were kind of given lemons to make lemonade, and we've done extremely well throughout the Clerks Association in training and getting everybody on board. But there are other ways that can be workarounds, and the clerks have to make the e-filing work. And we just ask on behalf of the clerks when and if criminal e-filing does come in as a mandate. And I think, you know, my record department is now half its size because now it's just holding criminal and I've gotten rid of all the civil files. So I am for the criminal e-filing, if that's put in place, I can be ready, but my judges at this point in time said they're not going to agree to do criminal e-filing, which, you know, it's difficult with the size of county we have, and not being able to do one, I need to do all, because it's difficult to keep up with, okay, this court's doing this and this court's doing that, and keeping up with nine courts is, you know, difficult as it is, to make sure we're all getting on the same page. We're all being consistent on how we file and what we do in the courts. So with that, I don't know if you have any questions.
Ms. David, I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that you have e-filing, but that none of those records are available to the public? Did I hear you say that?
I do not provide it on the internet. Now, I have a public access terminal in my office, and if you want the records, you can come into my office. You can pull up a case out on the internet. If you go to Williamson County and pull up the records, you will not see documents. You will not see people's names. You will not see Social Security numbers. There's ways to delete, or there's ways to have rights and roles. As far as someone being able to change your records, they have to have rights and roles. IT sets up rights and roles. Court administrators cannot change my records. Court administrators can't see what I can see. We have a way to secure information on adoptions, expunctions. So if it is secure, there's only certain people even in my office that can see it because we have to have the ability to pull it up. But being a public record, that person can pull up the case. See, there is a case in Williamson County. They have to come to my office to look at it, and we monitor who gets in that file so we know.
Because I can envision a system where everything's available to the public, nothing's available to the public, or some things are and some things aren't. And the problem with the some things are and the some things aren't part is that you have clerks making that decision, and that would require them looking through every piece of paper and making sure that Social Security numbers aren't there, dates of birth aren't there. And you wouldn't happen to know that that's a child. You just see a name. You don't know that it's a child under 13 or that it's a rape victim. And so the third category, I think, can be problematic. It seems as though we'd have to choose everything on or everything off. And as Mr. Chapman, I think it was said, is that there are certainly problems with the everything on. So what would be your recommendation as to which of those three approaches that we should take? Everything on, everything off, or category number three?
Well, I think you have to look at it. I don't just secure everything unless I have an order. If I have an order that I'm to seal a case, that case is gone. But that's where the statute comes into play, because there's nothing that says the clerk can put out this information. How much of the information can they put out? And I think that's kind of where the line needs to begin, because clerks, for convenience to the attorneys can look at their cases, but for the public to be able to view, I think that may be something to look at. But having access just to funnel in for the attorneys to be able to look at their own cases, if that's going to be on the internet. But, and I guess, and I'm not sure if I'm answering that question or not, but for us to secure a case, the security comes in when it's either by statute or the judge has signed an order to seal it. And that's when it completely goes out of the system, and that I only have access as the administrator to see that. But I think the real line is to differentiate the who has the rights to see all of this information, because we do have those old cases that have Social Security numbers and things. And I think as a whole right now, we're doing a redaction for all of those old cases. But it's just playing catch up right now from this day forward to make sure they are all redacted.
Thank you. So to hear you describe it, you have a system in your county that is very efficient and must have a lot of sort of bells and whistles that allow you to hide things and allow other things to become available.
I have Odyssey.
Differentiate different documents. And I guess what I wonder is, number one, what kind of cost was involved in developing a system like that? And is that something that would be readily transferable to 200 plus counties around the state?
Well, I think throughout the state, there are several counties that are on Odyssey. And I think the Odyssey system only does what you have it do. And there are certain bells and whistles that have been put into place, and maybe other counties are not, using to the best of the benefit of that system. Because of listening to administrators or judges being able to change your information, there's always that rights and roles that I control as the records manager for Williamson County. They can't come in and change my records. I'm the only one that can make changes to cause numbers or, take out a document and things like that. So, I mean, it's not by any means a cheap area to go into. It does cost. However, I don't have my IT people are not here, so I can't give an exact amount. But Odyssey is aware of all the things that the clerks need, and they've worked well with us because we've been able to have input as we go along of what we need and what we need to do. And that's been the security that we've been able to put in place.
Thanks.
The question of redaction keeps coming up. And if you get an e-filing, and I know the man from Dallas mentioned that they've had, you know, things like financial records of, that are part of divorce cases. If you redact that information, which really should not be public available, how much is that costing you in time and money? Because it seems to me like if you have 250 cases coming in, and that you've got a victim in a sexual assault, you've got a minor who's a witness, you've got social security numbers, you may have addresses. What does it cost your office? I mean, if you just push it up there, fine, it comes in electronically, but then you have to go through it pretty much manually, don't you, and take that information out?
Well, at this time, we don't have the redaction. I sat through a presentation last week, and there is a company that is in connection with Odyssey, or Tyler, that does a redaction. And it was very high tech to sit and watch how they redact a document, the things that they put in, the tabs that they have to look for everything. So that's what we're moving forward to get everything from the past and the present and the future that will be redacted. At this point in time, if someone comes in and gives me a piece of paper, unless I have an order that says this is going to be sealed, I have to let them know you've got information in here, and that's where it falls on the attorney because of the sensitive data that they are to redact that out of there. As a clerk, I don't read the 10-page document to make sure that they've taken everything out.
But if they file a document in a pleading, and it because of the nature of the pleading, they have to put in that information, they can't redact that, can they?
No, not if it's required by statute, and that's where we have an issue, too, at this point in time. Whenever I get a divorce that's filed as ABA versus ABA and in the interest of da-da-da-da-da, we have all of these initials and being able to go back and look at it. So the sensitive data is an issue in itself to try to make sure that we've got information for down the road to be able to find these people or be able to give someone a correct judgment or divorce decree or a plea bargain. But
what do you do with jury rolls?
The jury,
when you get jury questionnaires, that has addresses. It has
those are not part of the file. Those are kept separately from the file. Even the jury list, once it is put in, it's just the names and the addresses and things are redacted. But we pretty well have everything in place that if it is a secure and it's personal information that's not to be put out, then we have ways that we do handle it. And it may be manually if it's not ordered by the judge. You know, basically they're supposed to do a redaction sheet and there's only certain things that you can redact from a document. So those are other things probably that needs to be put in play as far as what we can actually give to someone on a criminal case.
Could a small county afford that system?
I'm sorry?
Could a very small county, say Loving County, that has a population of about 115 people, could they afford a system like that?
That's one of the issues that I think came across with the civil leave filing. It's the smaller counties that are having to, you know, get their financial institutions or financial ways to be able to purchase such case management systems. And so I can see if things are not brought up for criminal e-filing, yes, that could be an issue because they've got to have a system that supports their cases and what they do.
But in the long run, a lot of times they end up saving money.
Yes, sir.
By putting this in. And so it's an initial outlay that is a problem.
But, I believe.
But in the long run, don't you find it pretty cost efficient?
I believe so. The startup is always, you know, getting everybody on board. But, and I've been in office for, well, this is my third term, but I've been in the clerk's office for 35 years. So handling so much paper and then being able to say, you know, we've only got computers now. I was one that was not really ready to go for change, but I can't imagine not being on civil e-filing now with all the papers that I've been able to move through and all the files I've been able to get out of the office. So.
The juror information, is it kept as a hard copy or is it a digital file that's just secured? So it's not available to the public?
Well, right now, because of us being, we are not paperless in any form on criminal. So I do have a hard copy that's kept away from the file. It does not go in the file.
How do you handle that civilly with the juror list?
The same. Well, the civil is redacted the addresses on the civil, but we do not put any card information in the files.
Thank you very much. Judge Mark Atkinson.
Morning, judges.
Morning.
Judge Keller. to steal a word from Lisa Davis a second, the Texas Center for the Judiciary is really just a delivery system. So we don't really have a position. We'll teach whatever you all come up with. We were going to do a session on it at the annual judicial conference, but I believe David Slayton, calling him out, at our curriculum committee meeting said we're not ready yet. So we pulled it out of the annual. But as soon as you have something in place, we'll do whatever kind of broadcasting you want. Well, a criminal justice conference, for instance, is in January right off the bat. But we'll also do anything you want, surveys. We've got 1,200 judges. We'll do blast emails, whatever y'all would like. So really, yeah, we'll just be the delivery system for you all, and then we'll teach on it. And that's about it. You know, as far as policy development for the county court at law, district court, and appellate justices, the judicial section of the state bar probably is more the policy group. We're just the teachers. Now, I will tell you a couple anecdotal things. Last year at our annual judicial conference, we had a session on the civil e-filing, and Casey Kennedy did it in conjunction with a vendor, but we didn't do it as a vendor, someone who had a software product that judges were finding helpful. And so a senior district judge sitting up in the front finally said, why don't you take a poll of how many 600 judges in the room at least? How many people like the e-filing? And it wasn't in the guy's presentation to take a poll, but okay. How many of y'all like it? 2 out of 600. How many, it says, now ask them, how many would like to go back to the old session and have paper files? He says, okay, ask it. 598, I'll raise their hands. So that's just maybe the hurdles y'all may face as you go along. I was, as I've been listening to people, I was thinking
sounds
about
very scientific, Pat.
Very scientific poll.
Yeah.
It's called unanimous, basically, yes. I'll just say that with the challenge for you all when you develop this, when I was on the bench in a real high volume court, county court at law, county criminal court, 100 cases a day, maybe 22.5 new ones every day, a lot of conversation was going on between me and the defendants. We're deciding if they're going to get an attorney or not, indigence inquiries, then with the lawyers. And man, I use that clerk's file, what we call the clerk's file, all the time. I found so much information in there. And when I've gone back and sat as a visiting judge, even in my old court, it ain't there anymore. It's just really, I feel hamstrung. I could go look up, but there was so much information in that clerk's file. This is, now, a member of the public could go down and get any of that. There's no doubt about it. But at least they'd have to go down and request it. So when that's going to be a challenge for you all, if it goes mandatory e-filing and how broad it goes. But I think it would be a lot tougher these days to pull up the information off a computer screen that I was able to rifle through on the complaint, the nature of the complaint, the resetting history of the case, pretrial release information that was given. Does that comport to what they're saying now that is regarding indigence requests? So I think that'll be a challenge. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Is Leah Mulliken here? How about Ryan Turner?
Judge Keller, members of the court, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. More people come in contact with municipal courts than all other courts in the state of Texas combined. We have, I guess, bombarded you with some statistics to kind of give the court a better insight in terms of the scale we're talking about. 80% of the state's criminal docket consists of municipal court dockets. There are 181,000 municipal court trials last year. In contrast, there were 47,000 trials in all other criminal courts in the state of Texas combined. This gets complicated when we start looking at the fact that more than 90% of the defendants in these courts are pro se. And then it becomes even more complicated when you add the fact that half of all of the cases filed in the state's municipal courts are being adjudicated in the 8 largest municipalities in the state of Texas, which I was sitting here and doing a little inventorying, you all live in. You are from these 8 largest cities. So after reviewing the work of JCIT and the statewide rules for electronic filing, TMCEC conducted an online survey of our constituents to assist the court in understanding really the benefits and the drawbacks of mandating electronic filing. And while there's no doubt the automation's good, and there's no doubt that electronic filing has its place, you know, TMCEC believes that if the court chooses to mandate e-filing, it should distinguish between those cases that are filed in other criminal courts versus those cases that are filed in municipal court. There are just kind of 3 points I'd like to reiterate about this, and I guess all of them kind of bring me back to this notion of similar but not the same, if I were to sum it all up. One, there's a digital divide. 44% of the respondents in our survey, when we asked municipal courts about the question that y'all are considering today, 44% of them don't even have case management systems. Maybe this is a real short trip if you talk about e-filing or mandating e-filing when we still have courts that don't have case management systems. 80% of the cities, including the cities that y'all are from, report that they have case management systems, but their case management systems are simply not equipped to accept the filings of parties. You may have seen in the Austin American Statesman, I believe it was yesterday or day before yesterday, that there is a serious concern in the state legislature about cybersecurity in Texas municipalities. We know statistically that 68% of our cities in Texas have a population of less than 2,000. And many of them just simply do not have the infrastructure that people associate with state levels of government. We also know that 52% of the courts that we talked to said that if the court were to do this, they would also hope that the state of Texas would provide these cities with these case management systems and with the technology required. Because this would just be a crushing cost for the smallest municipalities that we have in this state. In terms of cost, I'd like to make this my lead point. Cities stand alone. Unlike other states in the United States of America, Texas is the only state that has, or one of the only states, in which cities host only one court. In other states, you find, like in the state of New York, that municipalities host differing levels and different types of courts. When you try to generalize Dallas to Domino or Houston to Henrietta or, you know, San Antonio to San Leanna, the discrepancies you see in terms of what these cities have available to them, it's stark and it's very alarming. One of the comments that Judge Kiesler had made about the cost efficiency, and I don't really know what to call this, so I'm just going to label it the pro se cost corollary, is that while you typically think that having these things would make your courts more efficient, if the vast majority of your defendants are pro se and no one's using it, but you still have to buy it, then where's the cost efficiency? And that's what I think you'll see in the survey. We heard time and time again from the people that we spoke to. You know, we also know that, you know, in terms of looking forward, obviously, like you heard from the Center for the Judiciary, TMCEC will teach whatever you adopt. But the one thing that I really do want to make clear is that, you know, this is going to be harder, not easier, than to implement at either the district court level, the county court level, or the justice court level. And so I would urge the court that if you do move forward in this direction, if you choose not to let the kind of the free market and natural implementation to occur, which I know some people think is probably the best idea, that you would seriously consider a separate implementation. That municipal courts need to be involved at the ground level. Y'all may be aware there was no municipal court representation in JCIT when this thing was considered. Because, you know, we've seen time and time again that one-size-fits-all approaches don't work very well in municipal court. It doesn't matter if we're talking about expunctions, if we're talking about the Michael Morton Act, if we're talking about this. Any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Turner, do you have any thoughts, speaking from probably ignorance, whether the JPs have the same concerns?
Well, I know that Thea is here and that she's going to address the justice court perspective. I think it's similar. Here's the one thing I'd point out. I've worked for Kendall County and I've represented counties. Counties at least have the benefit of when you buy a software package, you can share it. The county, the district, the justice courts can all get a license and take the benefit of a one-time buy. That's something we don't have in municipal courts.
I can't. We had so many discussions, I can't remember whether we had made e-filing permissive in the municipal courts. We did, correct?
It's not really clear. Okay. I've talked to people who said that that's what they thought occurred, but if you read it, it's not that evident. The one thing that I had pointed out to the court's general counsel is that if you take a strict implementation of the rule, it says that once a majority of the judges with criminal jurisdiction notify the clerk that serves those judges, well, technically speaking, that could never happen in municipal court, and I don't think it could happen in a justice court either because those courts have their own clerks. I think that if that was the intention, Judge, it was not made crystal clear.
So my follow-up question is, are you aware of any municipality that is doing permissive e-filing and how it's working, if they are?
When we surveyed on this, and I know that was one of the questions that was asked, there were I'm doing this from memory. I want to say about 13% of them said that they were allowing some form of it, but I don't think we have enough information to tell you much more than that.
That's all I had, Judge.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Theodore Whalen.
Good morning, judges. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name's Thea Whalen, and I'm the executive director of the Texas Justice Court Training Center. So you will probably be hearing me echo some of the comments that Mr. Turner previously made. Again, we are an education vehicle. Whatever you all pass, whatever you all decide on, we're here to help you implement that throughout our justice courts. But there's definitely some of the issues I would speak to that would probably be more complicated in implementing it with the justice court. The first thing, the resources. How would the funding occur? And also the limited resources of the clerks. There are clerks for the justice courts, but there are plenty of our justice courts who are clerkless. And so they sometimes don't have the manpower to make these transitions as seamlessly as some other jurisdictions. Also, there's the issue of access to the court, and it appears that the pro se filings and that sort of thing aren't going to be required to be done through the electronic system. But sort of speaking as to what Mr. Turner said, if we're going to be looking at what the justice courts deal with, it's predominantly going to be the pro se litigants. And if we're not going to require the charging instrument to go through this e-filing system, what are we really left with but a very expensive system that might not really be serving that court level that well? And so those would be my two thoughts on it. But of course, whatever you all come up with, we're happy to implement. We're happy to provide that information to our judges. We'd probably ask that there be a little bit, I suppose, a gradual transition available if you do decide to take this to the justice court level so that we have the full opportunity to give our time and effort to help them understand the transition and make sure there's deliverables available and resources so that they can understand the rules as best as possible. I will tell you that I'm unaware of any justice courts that have taken advantage of the opportunity to do the criminal e-filing. And as you probably know, we weren't mandated under the civil e-filing either. So there's very few justice courts that are functioning under the civil e-filing as well.
You know, I'm sorry. Do you know if there is a plan to make civil e-filing mandatory in JP courts?
I'm unaware of any of that. Correct.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
We have one person who has signed up to comment, David Slayton, the Administrative Director of the Office of Court Administration. Do you want to offer some comments?
Good morning, Presiding Judge Keller and members of the court. I just wanted to answer any questions you might have, but also to offer a few pieces of information which I think might be helpful to you as you consider this difficult task. The first and probably the most important thing, and I know you all have asked a lot of great questions about this, but it's a question that we're all having to look at, and I just want to make sure there's a distinction drawn between e-filing and electronic access. Those are two separate things which have very different issues in play. A lot of the comments that have been made today and a lot of the questions you've asked have dealt with electronic access and how do we deal with that. And quite frankly, it's an issue that we face today, whether we do e-filing or not, because we have, as was pointed out previously, there are no rules or statutes in place which restrict clerks from putting documents online today. So whether it's in a paper-based system where a clerk scans documents and places them online, or if it's through an electronic filing system where the documents are delivered electronically, it's an issue either way. I know that the Supreme Court is also looking at this issue as well, because it's the same thing on the civil side where documents, once again, there's no restrictions. You might be aware of the judge from Dallas mentioned this earlier, Judge Adams, about the situation in Dallas where family law records were placed online with Social Security numbers in there, all kinds of things. And so there was some issues with that. So this is not an issue that's unique to the criminal system. It's not unique to e-filing. It's a system issue that we have to address as a judiciary going forward. And I know that there's work that's underway already on that issue, and there'll be more work where hopefully you all will participate in that discussion, because I know it's a big problem. The one thing I would want to point out too is just reiterate that I don't think on the civil side there's no movement towards mandating pro se filers to e-file through the civil side, and certainly we would not recommend that perhaps ever on the criminal side that the court ever mandate that, because of obviously the difficulties and the due process challenges that would be in place if that were mandated. We would also recommend that you also not mandate at the JPU municipal court level in criminal cases. It's not mandatory at the civil level, and to answer your question, Judge Alcala, I'm not aware of any movement to do so on the civil side either. There is a project ongoing that's just underway to look at electronic charging electronically through the criminal system at the JPU municipal court level. TxDOT has funded a grant to OCA to begin to work with the municipal courts on this and the JP courts, but that's very early on, and so any mandate or any consideration should be quite a ways down the road, I would suppose. A couple other things I want to make points about. One thing is with regard to, does e-filing make the courts more or less accessible? And as this court knows, you have mandated e-filing in your court, and you've mandated e-filing at the appellate courts, and I would like to think that you all wouldn't have done that if you thought it would have made the courts less accessible, especially when we're talking about it applying only to attorneys. And so the thought would be that it would make trial courts more accessible as well. For instance, courts would be available 24/7 as opposed right now. They're only open 5 days a week, 8 to 5 generally, or if you can find the clerk at home, maybe. Obviously, there may be exceptions to this where if a lawyer's computer system goes down, the civil rules make exceptions where, say, if there's an emergency, you can still file in paper so that there's no inhibitor to getting into court, and there shouldn't be, and I would think that the criminal rules would make the same exceptions. And then one other thing I would point out is that we did a survey of all of the attorneys who had e-filed last year and said, tell us what you think. What's your experience? And I would just report to you, and we're happy to share these with you, that 70% of the respondents, we had over 4,000 lawyers respond, which is a pretty statistically significant response rate, and we had 70% of the lawyers respond that it was that e-filing made it less expensive for them to practice and was more made it less time-consuming for them to practice in the courts. And so even though perhaps there was resistance up front from attorneys and from judges, I think once attorneys have made the transition, they found it to be a better situation for them overall. Same thing with regard to the judges. We might disagree with Judge Atkinson about what percentage responded saying they didn't like it, but Casey told me he was there and he said it was, I think it's more like half and half. But if you talk to several of the judges who've been resistant, and I know this court has its own experience dealing with electronic filing at this point, but several of the judges who've been resistant have come back to me and said, you know, once I finally tried it and figured it out, it actually made my life better, and I can work remotely now. So we just point that out. Two quick things in the few seconds I have left here I want to make sure you're aware of, and I know probably members of the audience are. One of the things that OCA has just recently announced to help the smaller counties with equipment is that we're actually offering, and it's currently open for counties to apply for us to help purchase equipment that they need to implement e-filing. We've received responses already from several counties around the state, and at least at this point, we believe we'll be able to purchase all the needs that they've requested. So we're trying to help them with that. The other thing I would point out is that the civil rules with regard to redaction, I know you are familiar with this, but they lay out what the sensitive data is, and they put the burden upon the attorneys to keep that information out of the files in the first place, because the Supreme Court, when they were looking at this, felt like if it's sensitive information that we don't want in the files, why would we even want it available at the courthouse? And so to the judge's question about with regard to documents that require it to be in there, the way the civil rules handle that is say if sensitive information is required by statute or rule or court order to be in the file, then that document is confidential and not allowed to be placed on the internet. Once again, that goes into the issue of public access, which I think this court and the Supreme Court need to think about with regard to whether or not you do e-filing or not. This is a big problem, and as Mr. Chapman pointed out earlier, it does have impacts, and so we really ought to all be addressing that sort of outside and second to the e-filing system. And so those are the points I'd have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
So on the civil side, basically you have mandatory civil e-filing.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
All the lawyers have to file everything electronically. What is happening after that with respect to public access of the information? Can you maybe describe that for us, what's happening on the civil side?
Sure, and the way I would describe it is that every county is doing whatever every county clerk decides they want to do. There is no regulation currently at the statewide level via statute or by rule as to what clerks can do, how much information they can put online, whether they restrict access to certain things by registered users. It's really a free-for-all, and so you have some counties where the clerk has taken the position that they want to put everything online. You have some counties where the clerk has said, I will never put anything online, and then to your point earlier, you have some clerks who who've made some hybrid system where they've chosen to put certain things online, but they've restricted others. We're working with the JCIT right now to develop a what we've called RACER at this point, playing off the PACER name at the federal level, to make available to judges an access system where they could see all the electronic documents that are filed, and then ultimately making that available at some point when the policy issues are decided to the general public. But our point with that is RACER stands for Registered Access to Court Electronic Records, and our thought is that every person who wants to use it should have to register, and based upon what type of user they are, they may have restrictions. So it may be that we don't want nosy neighbors looking at their neighbor's divorce cases, and so we restrict that. Or you may be that we say you can look at the case number and the name of the defendant and what they're charged with, but you can't see the documents. I don't know what that will look like, but ultimately the thought is that there ought to be some restrictions on what people can see, and but also the ability for the public to generally have access. So just making those distinctions, I think, is a really important thing to do.
So Judge Simmons said that JCIT is recommending that we have mandatory criminal e-filing. And then, of course, you've heard all the comments today from Mr. Chapman and others and DA Yenny about all of the concerns about rape victims and that sort of thing that we need to be especially careful about on the criminal side. Do you envision a situation where we have mandatory criminal e-filing, but then would we also say that nothing is public until we can come up with something everybody's comfortable with? What are you recommending with respect to that?
I think that is a very good consideration, because I think this court could mandate electronic filing and put restrictions on what's placed on the internet. Obviously the Supreme Court, when they mandated e-filing, said if documents have sensitive information on them, you cannot place them on the internet. The only thing, just from seeing the practical impacts of that from the civil side, is there are places where the clerks and the counties have worked out a system where they provide access to the attorney's record in the case via the internet. And so when those rules went into effect, obviously that had a pretty profound impact on the system there. So if the court considers doing something that, which I think is a really good idea, then I think you would just want to take into account what would be the practical impact upon the system players. So whether that's the DA's office, who may have electronic access to the court file now, or defense attorneys, just maybe making a distinction there that that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the general public having access. Until this issue is resolved, it ought to be something that's perhaps restricted. I would point out that the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court Advisory Committee, the rules-making body of the Supreme Court, has been looking at this issue since 2004. So it's really at the point
not
now where
answers.
It's time. There was a recommendation made to the court, but it's never been adopted, just because there are a lot of complicating factors. So it's a difficult issue, but now's the time to address it.
And then I think my last question has to do with what I think Judge Atkinson touched on. These county criminal courts, have you ever sat in one?
Absolutely.
Okay. If you haven't, I suggest you spend some time there. There's literally 100 defendants there. And they're just coming up one after the other to talk to the judge about bail or plea bargains or whatever. And typically what happens is the judge is sitting here, the clerk hands the file, the judge opens it up.
Sure.
And then maybe the clerk writes a docket notation, and then you move on, and things are moving fast.
Right.
And I guess the concern from these judges is that logging on, getting the cause number, inputting information in the computer, that it's just going to slow everything down versus just this stream of grabbing the file, looking at it, and handing it back. And I wonder if that's different, I think, from civil courts. I'm unaware of any civil court that deals with that kind of fast-moving volume. Maybe they do, but that's not what I've heard. So I wonder if you can speak to that concern.
Sure. So I think you're right that most civil courts don't deal with that type of volume or that speed. The only exception might be family law courts, where there might be a child support heavy docket or something like that. But for the most part, I think criminal is probably our busiest dockets. And I've sat in those. I worked in one of those courts when I first started working in the courts. And the one thing I would say is that what you're speaking to is what we are now describing nationally and in our state as judicial tools, the tools that we provide to judges to be able to interact in an electronic environment. And it is one of the biggest challenges we face on the civil side, but particularly on the criminal side. One of the things that we're working on with this RACER system is an ability for judges to be able to have quick access to documents that they could basically scroll through in a way that they would scroll through a paper file, because I've been saying that that until we provide judges the ability to interact on the bench with a file the way they would in the old system, maybe not the same because you don't touch it, as you all know from your experiences with it, but in a way that's efficient in the courtroom where that can be done, that's going to be an inhibitor. So we have to make sure that's available. Judicial tools have to be available. The only other thing I would say is it's really important is there's nothing in the civil mandate, and I presume that, and I would recommend that this court not mandate that judges do orders electronically, although we encourage it because it is efficient. But for instance, in a criminal a docket setting where they're doing pleas, for instance, that paperwork most of the time would still be a paper-based system, at least at this point. Some counties, I know, for instance, Harris County is working on ability for signatures to happen electronically at the bench where the defendant could sign their waiver electronically, the judge could sign the judgment electronically. That's great, but I would recommend that this court, that most counties are not going to have that type of capability, and so I would recommend this court not put the mandate upon judges to e-file their judgments and orders electronically. That can still be done in a paper-based system, so that when we're doing pleas at the bench, you know, that process can still happen in the way that it is done now, until at least the point where we have a system that is efficient enough that judges could do it electronically.
I think Judge Adams had pointed out that fine, file it electronically, but make me a paper copy so I don't have to print it out again and again and again. And that way, both systems could exist amicably, it sounds like.
So obviously, Judge, the biggest issue with that general statement is the cost to the county. So if you were to mandate electronic filing and every document were to come in, every document that's filed by an attorney were to come into the system electronically, to then require every document to be printed would be perhaps expensive for the county. What we've recommended on the civil side for judges is, for instance, maybe you want to see the summary judgment motion in your hand, Judge, but you don't need the returns on the subpoena or the, you know, certain things. I mean, the same as you all do when you're working in electronic. There may be certain things that you want, but you don't really need everything in paper. So we've called that a paper on demand system. And certainly, you know, as the judge mentions, there are things that perhaps he might want on the bench available to him when he's in the middle of trial, or if there's an evidentiary hearing with a motion to suppress, maybe he wants that motion where he can have it and make notes on it. Certainly, I think that's an option that clerks are willing to work with judges on. The requirement that clerks print everything that's filed every time would perhaps be burdensome to counties. It would be silly because they wouldn't need everything. So, you know, we've been working with clerks and judges to say, come up with that appropriate balance of, you know, don't print everything, allow the clerk to designate the electronic file as the official record like they've done, but then having paper on demand when the judge needs it and working with the judges to make sure they have that is the appropriate method forward.
I do have one more question. So it sounded like you said that that the Supreme Court has mandated that no sensitive information be placed on the internet. That sounds like it conflicts with something that I've heard several times throughout today's comments, that there are no rules out there with regard to putting things on the internet. So I wonder if you could speak to that.
So the way the Supreme Court's rules address sensitive data is that, number one, they define what sensitive data is in the rule. It says driver's license, bank account numbers, social security numbers, names and addresses of children, just specifically lays out what those are. And then it says that may not be placed. Attorneys must not place that information into a document that's filed with the court. That's the basic line and rule. But there's an exception that says if the statute, court order, or some rule requires that information to be placed into the internet, into the document, then basically the attorney has to note on the document, this document contains sensitive data. And the point of this was to make sure that the burden was not upon clerks to search through every document that was being filed to try to find that social security number, because then that would obviously probably there'd be issues with that. And so what the court says is when it's in there in the documents and it's noted this is confidential, this document contains sensitive information, that document may not be placed on the internet. It prohibits courts from doing that. And that's really the only regulation that happens with that. And so documents that don't have that sensitive data or are not noted as that may be placed on the internet, or documents that are old that were filed before the sensitive data rules went into effect in January of 2014, can be out there. So as I point out, right now there's very little regulation of any form as to what can be and what can't be placed on the internet. It's a particular issue.
Are you aware of the rate of criminal e-filing so far?
I am. So we have about, I believe, around 60 counties that are allowing permissive e-filing. We've had several counties, and I believe the district clerk, Lisa David, pointed out that her judges won't allow it. As you know, the Court of Criminal Appeals rules that were put into effect said that the majority of the judges having criminal jurisdiction had to approve it. We've had several counties where the clerks have asked, and they were turned down. We've also had some clerks who've said, I didn't even ask because I just had conversations with them, and they told me they didn't want it. So that's the number of counties. And we're having somewhere between 500 and 600 documents filed per day. Which would be obviously a very small portion of the number of criminal documents being filed across the state every day.
Has the rate been going up?
It has not really gone up. It's stayed pretty much around that 500 to 600 documents a day since the rules went into effect last fall.
Thanks. Any other questions?
More question, I apologize, but what about how this is interacting with the Michael Morton Act? Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I mean, obviously the Michael Morton Act deals with exchange of discovery between the prosecutor and the defense attorney. Point that discovery is generally not filed with the court, at least not unless there's some dispute, I don't know how the e-filing system would have an impact on its exchange, except to say that, one of the things that could be developed with the e-filing system is an electronic ability for the prosecutor and defense attorney to exchange that. I know, like El Paso County, for instance, has developed a very efficient electronic exchange of that discovery. Certainly, that's something that we could work with the prosecutor's defense bar on with regard to setting up a way for them to exchange it. So, for instance, on the civil side, we allow them to do what we call e-service only, which means in the exchange of discovery in the civil case, the plaintiff can send the discovery electronically to the defense, and it never gets filed with the court. It's just an electronic exchange between them. And the nice thing for the parties is, number one, there's not a cost to that if they use the state-provided system. And number two, there's a tracking mechanism. So you can actually see, number one, it was sent, when it was sent. You can see when the other party received it. You can see when the other party opened it. So there's some audit trail for the parties to be able to see when that information is exchanged. So I think it might, in some ways, perhaps help. Otherwise, I think it probably would have very little impact on it.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you all so much for being here today. It's been extremely interesting, and your comments have been extremely helpful to the court. And thank you all for attending. And I see a lot of people who are here. If you have any other comments as a result of this hearing, we would like to see them, so please submit them in writing. And the purpose for which we have met today is now concluded.
All right. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh.